Welcome to Burr News Current Affairs Podcast with Jeremy Deacon. Listen at your leisure on www.burrnews.com.
Good afternoon and thank you for joining us today for our latest live interview. This time, Jason Hayward, the president of the BPSU, has been kind enough to join us. Good afternoon, Mr. Hayward, and thank you for sparing some time today.
Good afternoon, Mr. Deacon.
It's been a very busy few weeks.
Yeah.
Six to seven weeks. There's a lot of headlines being made in that time. Mm-hmm. Let's just start, if we may, with the latest, I suppose, news that made the headline. That's Reverend Tweed. Mm-hmm. Why is the issue of Reverend Tweed's work permit so important?
It's extremely important. We believe it's an effort to silence an individual who has been speaking out against the government and the community. I know the minister would like for us to believe that is because of some administrative errors on our work permit renewal.
They have been consistent about that, of course.
But we know that it's greater than that. And so we believe it's an effort to silence an individual and an effort to get rid of an individual who has been extremely vocal against the government.
So why did it become a union issue?
It's not necessarily a union issue. So I haven't framed it or considered it to be a union issue.
No, you personally haven't. You were involved in the People's Campaign.
Correct.
But obviously your colleague, Chris Ferbert, from the BIU, mm-hmm. And I know you can't comment on him, but
yes.
Because of that, perhaps a lot of people saw it as a union issue.
It's a greater relationship between Reverend Tweed and Reverend Tweed's family and the BIU. Obviously, his father was the general secretary at the BIU. They are still feeling or upset because maybe they feel as though his father was chased off the island and they believe it's happening to his son and they're saying maybe not under my watch or whatever it may be. I think that's a question for Chris Rabbit, but I believe it's a greater national issue when we start talking about freedom of speech and how people are treated when they speak out in this community.
Just going back to the government's position, mm-hmm. they've been adamant that the Reverend Tweed has to leave the country.
Mm-hmm.
Have you left it at that now? It's all gone a bit quiet.
No, it's certainly not left at that. I believe some other options are being explored that I can't comment on. But I don't think that's the end of the road. It's unfortunate that we're here, and it's also unfortunate the way in which information has came out about this particular story and how his life has been delved into and his birth certificate has been released and put online and things of that nature and questioning somebody's father. I mean, for him, it's an uncomfortable predicament to be in, and it seems as though your life is on show, but I guess that comes with taking on leadership roles in the community.
Some people, before I do these interviews, mm-hmm. obviously I study what social media is saying, read the papers and the comments, and it's quite interesting that a lot of people kind of saw the stance of the BIU and the People's Campaign, which you can comment on more,
mm-hmm.
Has been slightly hypocritical in that it was only about a year ago you were marching about immigration,
mm-hmm.
Bermudians wanting getting jobs, etc. Mm-hmm. Do you find, how would you answer them that they would, those that say it's a hypocritical stance over Reverend Tweed?
I wouldn't consider it to be a hypocritical stance. I think people also misunderstood our stance on the Hill that day. We are not anti-Bermudian. We believe, and we have always said that we believe there should be pathway for citizenship into this country. And that's with any country, there's a pathway in terms of when persons can become citizens. What we don't like is unilateral decisions that lead to this time frame. So what we were saying is there should be comprehensive immigration reform. Now, surrounding that protest was a lot of talk in reference to Bermudianization and Bermudians getting an opportunity and Bermudians not being displaced, and that's a genuine concern. But the primary focus of why we wanted that hill was not to block foreigners from entering Bermuda or becoming Bermudian. It was about us wanting to be part of a process that affects us all.
So there's no hypocrisy as far as you're concerned?
No, the Reverend Tweed issue is we're not talking about a Bermudian being displaced. And it's not about a Bermudian being displaced when it comes to the church. The church has its doctrine in reference to how the bishop makes appointments. That has been historical for years. If you look at the St. Paul AME church and the pastors it had, majority of its pastors have been non-Bermudian. So I don't think it's a real matter of concern whether we are prohibiting a Bermudian from obtain a majorba or not.
There was some suggestion, I believe, that the AME Church had an understanding before with previous governments about work permits, and that government, if the AME proposed something, the government wouldn't interject. Has that been the case?
I can't comment on the relationship between the government and the AME Church, but from past practice, we will see that non-Bermudian pastors of the AME churches have been able to come in on appointment by the bishop without this level of... the work permit requirements did change in the process, in all fairness, to the government. But I think there should have been consideration given to the churches to see how their doctrine and the policy can be in alignment.
According to the government, of course, they did give a lot of consideration to the churches and did ask them to come back, and that never seemed to have happened, come back with an amended application.
Yeah, I can't speak to that.
You mentioned earlier on that you have got other things in the pipeline planned. As I understand it, Thursday is the Reverend Tweed's last day, is that correct? Are you planning anything for that day?
Nothing specifically, no.
So he's going to leave the island on that day? You're not going to see him off?
I can't speak to that. I know that he personally is exploring other options, and I think we would have a conversation in reference to whether those options pan out or not, and what his future may be.
I'll come back to that. So we don't expect to see any demonstrations at the airport on the 19th?
Not to my knowledge.
What other options is the Reverend Tweed exploring? Are those outside of Bermuda?
No, inside. There could be an option maybe of a judicial review on the ambitious process event.
Right.
And the judge can grant him an opportunity to stay while the matter is reviewed. And so we're not sure.
But that would have to happen before Thursday, presumably?
Correct.
So is that likely to happen before Thursday?
I know that option is being explored.
Okay. Now, as I understand it, if Reverend Tweed does leave on Thursday, he could actually come back in a few days' time as a visitor for 3 weeks.
Yeah.
Is he going to come back?
I'm not sure. I haven't had those conversations with him. We haven't discussed what happens if he actually leaves the island. And so I don't know. There's still some things he has to sort out personally in his life in reference to his employment and the finances and things of that nature. So I think those would be some questions that you can probably pose to him.
I would love to. If you could arrange an interview with him, I'd love to, but I haven't been able to. From the People's Campaign point of view, is there anything you're planning, that group's planning, in terms of Reverend Tweed on Thursday or later on?
Not for Reverend Tweed on Thursday. I think if the bishop makes the decision that he will move Reverend Tweed to another location or another church, then we would have to swallow that as the decision the bishop made. But if the bishop still holds fast that Reverend Tweed should be the pastor of St. Paul's AME Church, then we will support the bishop in that particular call.
There was a moment during the demonstration, I suppose, for a better word over the Reverend Tweed, where there was a challenge made to the America's Cup. Just from your personal point of view, obviously it wasn't you who said that, but from your personal point of view, was that a misjudgment? Was that a step too far?
I don't want to say it's a step too far, but what I would say is persons may have recognized that the America's Cup is dear to this government and dear to love in Bermuda, and I think the person was trying to say, if you don't want to focus on our issues, then let me throw this out here so you can pay attention. And so I don't know that that call was made with the BRU at their membership meeting. I don't know the rationale, the complete rationale behind it, but I believe it was there to grab the attention of the government, and I believe we got the government's full attention now.
Where do you stand on that personally?
Jeopardizing an event. Me personally, I know that the America's Cup will have a positive effect for the country, but I also want the government to pay attention to some other issues in the country that others care about.
But and personally, so, do you think jeopardizing the America's Cup was the right call, from your personal opinion?
From my personal opinion, do I think jeopardizing the America's Cup is the right call? Me, personally, I don't think I was there. I'm there yet, as I would have made that recall. I think that would be the last course of action, and things would have to really deteriorate. But that was a call that was made, and I'm neither her or there on it. The America's Cup, to me, I believe, is going to give Bermuda benefit, but Me personally, I have no real interest in the America's Cup.
Do you think making that call at that time reflected very badly on the uni, the BIU, but also more importantly, from your point of view, reflected badly on you and the People's Campaign, because you were inextricably linked, whether you liked it or not.
And I guess that's a pill we have to also swallow, that when you're part of a group and somebody makes a call like that, you don't want to be divisive in these times. So I'm not going to come across and say what was said was right or wrong. There's where it certainly wasn't articulated from my mouth. That was certainly not my position at the time. I prefer to deal with specifically the matters of the at hand, and that's where I want to focus my energy on the matters that are actually on the table.
There was an awful lot of rhetoric going around. I'll let people make their own opinion. It's not for me to state my opinion, it's to ask the questions. Now, there was a moment where you referred to name-calling. Mm-hmm. Obviously, there was a lot of name-calling going on. And you were quoted as saying, for a certain segment of our population, that scenario does not end well. We can easily bring this battle to the doorsteps of many who have loud mouths and are extremely disrespectful. Can you elaborate on that, what you were talking about and why?
Mm-hmm. I don't have an issue with name-calling. I don't have an issue with difference of opinion. But there are some persons who openly call for violence against another group of individuals in the society.
But you were talking about Civil War at one stage.
No, let's clarify that. let's clarify that.
Well, you asked the question about Civil
that's
War.
That's right. So I see it. It seems as though the Premier is trying to call one segment of the population to rise up against the NACs. And I was basically saying our particular problem is not with any of our fellow citizens. It's with the policies of the government. I did ask, I wonder if the Premier is trying to start a civil war.
What made you say that the Premier was trying to stir up one side against the other?
It was a call for the silent majority to rise.
Right.
And so at that point in time, when we're on the streets and we're opposing a specific issue, then you're calling on another set of group of persons to rise up and support. And what we didn't want to see is clashes against groups of persons. What we wanted to see, if anything, is debate on the issues that are at hand.
Right.
And so it was the reverse I was actually trying to do. I was actually making it clear that our war is not against other fellow citizens, but against the policies of the government, and that's what I actually said in the video.
You're using the word rise literally in terms of rise up and respond, retaliate.
Yes. I if that was not what was meant, but certainly what I envisioned is an ugly scenario where we have persons coming out and protesting, full and persons coming out and protesting, gangs, and somehow there's a clash in the middle. And that's what we don't want.
But I just want to go back to the original question, where you can say we can easily bring this battle to the doorstep.
Correct.
Your rhetoric was just as bad, wasn't it?
If you don't listen to the whole statement, and the statement says, if we drive up to your house, knock on your door, I wonder if you'd prefer to have a conversation. And so I'm more interested in debating with persons over on these issues rather than bringing violence on persons. I'm not a violent individual. I have children. I have to, in my position in the community, I have to be responsible. I'm not advocating violence. But what I want to say is, you say people say these negative things behind a computer screen. I wonder if they say it in person as you're sitting down. And let's have some reasoned dialogue around these particular issues. And so I never called for violence in any of those statements. I know the way it was framed, even in some other media, the way it was framed, it was painted as though I'm calling for a civil war and then violence on your doorstep. And so I wasn't calling for a civil war. I was asking persons, let's focus on the issues rather than pitting two sides of the community against each other. And the other thing was, if you show up to your doorstep, let's have a conversation about the issue rather than one person's calling violence. I have no problem with persons opposing the views that we have. Mm. That's natural in a community. But persons shouldn't be invoking violence on an individual because we have different views.
Last week, so the viewers know, we were meant to schedule this last week, but we changed it because Mr. Hayward agreed to do a live interview.
Mm-hmm.
And I was doing some research, and I did appeal for questions on a Facebook page. Mm-hmm. One of them was, when you speak to the public, are the views you share personal or the views of your BPSU membership?
As a leader, it's very difficult to say I don't speak from a personal position, but my personal position is also based on the positions and the roles I assume in the community.
Right.
So I am the leader of the BPSU, and some of my views are reflected. I take that into consideration, that what I say, I have to be responsible in terms of what I say because of the positions I hold. When we go back and I have meetings with my executive and my general counsel, we have discussions of reference around the involvement of me as the president of the BPSU and the People's Campaign, and it's very much supportive. In terms of the general membership, our membership is very diverse, so I will never be able to speak on or for the entire membership of the BPSU. But certainly there are opportunities that we have in this organization for members who share a difference of opinion to bring that forward, such as our AGMs, through the shop stewards and through the general council meetings.
Did you consult the BPSU members on the things you were saying beforehand?
In reference to what?
Well, when you were engaged with the People's Campaign and when you were making statements, when you had the press conferences, when you had the meetings, were you engaging with the BPSU members prior to that?
What we have is we have monthly general council meetings, and the general council meetings is where we would have that dialogue with those members in reference to how they feel on a specific issue. But asking for permission or so.
Not permission, but at least informing.
Yeah, and I send union updates to the membership in reference to these things. In reference to the airport in particular, the BPSU actually put out a position paper, and that position paper was against PPPs in general, and we spoke about both the hospital and the airport as being bad deals.
I'm going to come on to the airport, obviously, later on. It's one of the big issues I need to talk to you about. But I want to carry on with the events of surrounding Reverend Tweed for the moment. It was kind of interesting. Earlier on, when we were in your office, there was a big picture of the events this time last year, January the 27th, where hundreds and hundreds of people descended on the House of Assembly for, if I remember, two or three days about the immigration issue. Support this time seemed to be noticeably less.
We have different support for different issues. And so the picture you saw in my office was actually the furlough day dispute. And so that furlough day dispute, because it directly affected a large number of public service employee salaries, suddenly you had the majority of the public service employees out. You have issues that have a direct effect and indirect effect. We find those issues that have a direct effect to people's pockets go on more support.
Yeah.
The others, you have to then inform persons in terms of the negative effects of some of these other issues that would have an indirect effect to their pockets.
So do you think on this particular issue, looking at the turnout, that there was a groundswell of support, or were you disappointed with the level of obvious support?
In reference to the Reverend Tweed issue, the first day was a good amount of support, I'll consider, for the timing that we had. The second day, in the morning, if you look at the pictures, it wasn't many support, but at the end of the day, we had a full hall of persons, so that then the support came out. I think the support is there. The problem is people are less inclined to come off the job for specific reasons, and it's certainly fear of retaining employment is a big issue. We haven't progressed as a country where we're prepared to make the sacrifices that are necessary all the time. But as you walk the community and as you speak with persons, you find that a large portion of persons are in support of the particular issues. I know that survey that was released doesn't suggest so, but...
Well, it was pretty comprehensive, wasn't it? 86%.
Yeah.
I think we're not in favour of the Reverend Tweed getting his work permit, or not in favour of the union support.
Yeah. And
that was fairly comprehensive. I think that's probably one of the most comprehensive surveys I've ever seen in Bermuda. Overwhelmingly against surveys, with an overwhelming result, I should say.
Yeah.
Were you surprised by that?
A bit. A bit surprised, but I believe it is to do with maybe sometimes the timing of these surveys. I don't know, and the survey was kind of tagged into the America's Cup issue at the same time. And I think that America's Cup comment doesn't rub a lot of people well, so I don't know if that had an impact. But the Reverend Tweed issue, if persons are not had a direct contact with Reverend Tweed or worked with him, or understand what he stands for, or follow what he's been saying since he's been hurt, then I think there will be, that's the, maybe a reason why there will be a lack of support.
You were kind of bemoaning the fact that you couldn't bring the BPSU with you on industrial action. If and you mentioned earlier on that there are things being planned. Mm-hmm. If one of those things are industrial action, would you hope to bring the BPSU along with you?
It's not in, we have to not consider it industrial action, and that's the reason why the BPSU is not there. When these are not labor issues, I do not go to my membership to call them out to participate. These are national issues, mm-hmm. which people need to participate based on their own conscience level. And so that's what I encourage my members to do. I have meetings with my members, even with the December issue, when I called the BPSU meeting in the morning. I called the meeting in the morning because persons were saying whether the BPSU is going to call out its membership or not. That was coming from the BPSU members. And in that meeting, I stated to those members that this is not a BPSU issue. Mm. This is an issue, a national issue, we believe, and you should be exercise your right to demonstrate based on where you feel, what you feel about this issue. So if you support this issue, then we encourage you to come out. But if you don't support this issue, then we encourage you to go back to work.
So did many members of the BPSU turn up? Because you were saddened, I suppose, that you said there weren't many or didn't join the fight.
And our membership is less inclined to come out on an individual basis than if we called out on a collective basis.
So you don't see that as a lack of support?
I don't see it as a lack of support. That's just the nature of this organization and the nature of our membership. Our membership, if I called a membership meeting and we had a vote on collective support, you will find that people would feel more protected in the collective than when we ask persons to come out on their own conscience and where there's less of protection because there is not an organizational decision to come out.
Would you hope that if events were repeated, would you hope to see more BPSU members come out?
This is not about drumming up support from BPSU membership. This is about members of the if BPSU members support the issue, then yes, I would like to see you come out if you support the issue. But if you don't support the issue, then I'm not encouraging you to come out. This is one of those things where we're asking people to make conscientious decisions. Mm. I don't think we're at a point yet where people, even though they support an issue, are readily able to jump up and say, you know what, I'm prepared to do the necessary sacrifice that is needed to come out and support this issue. It's real for the community about persons retaining employment. And so persons don't want to be penalized for standing up for what they believe in. And so there is a real reluctance of persons to come out.
Just going back in time a bit. Mm-hmm. Actually, no, we won't go back in time. We'll go forward in time. To start with, February the 3rd. Everybody's talking about the date of February the 3rd. Mm-hmm. Are we likely to see more demonstrations outside the House of Assembly when it returns that day?
We demonstrated on December 2nd. I don't believe that anything has fundamentally changed from December 2nd to now, so it should be anticipated that there, if nothing changes, there will be further action on February 3rd.
And will that be the People's Campaign, the BIU or the BPSU calling for that, or all three?
I don't think that any organization, and neither of those organizations made the call last time to come out. So I don't think any individual organization will be making the call. I think persons understand what...
The PLP asked the people to come out, of course.
Yes, the PLP made the call and persons did respond to it. But none of the organizations that you named. And I don't think those organizations will be calling for persons to come out, but persons know that February 3rd is a significant date because it's when the House of Assembly resumes. Persons know that the conditions haven't changed since December 2nd. So I would anticipate that the crowd would be back out there on February 3rd.
Bearing in mind if they are, mm-hmm. bearing in mind what happened on December the 2nd, and I've asked this question before generally, mm-hmm. not specifically to a person, but mm-hmm. I want to ask it. Was a demonstration that we saw, Democracy at Work, or was it stopping democracy from working?
We would consider it democracy at work. If
why?
And this is, if the government represents the people, but the government is doing things against the people's wishes, then the people ought to have a right to stop the government from proceeding with things that are not in their best interest. Now, if the government was able to prove that the majority of Bermudians, or the majority of residents in this country support the airport project, this airport redevelopment project, I would not protest.
Let's just rewind a bit, because, of course, the governments are always elected democratically. Mm-hmm. They were put into place, the MPs were put into place, from the MPs come the cabinet and the premier, to actually carry out the people's mm-hmm. business, because that's what they were elected to do. Yeah.
But where did they get that mandate from?
From the last election.
They did get a mandate
for redevelopment
of airport.
No, they had a mandate to carry out the people's business to which they were elected.
And so how do you consider building a new airport under this particular structure as the people's business?
You said the government wasn't doing what the people wanted.
Mm-hmm.
I'm saying the government was elected by the people to do work on behalf of the people.
So that means once you elect a government, they can do anything they want because they were elected.
You answer the question. I'm not here to answer the questions.
No, I don't feel as though the government can do anything they want once they're elected. I believe that the government ought to consult with the people and get a mandate or some approval from the people in reference to this major project that will affect.
Well, there's never been a mandate before, has there? There's never been like a referendum when Barclay was built or whatever. All that kind of stuff that went on. There's never a referendum. It was a government carrying out the people's business, for which it was elected to do.
This has a different effect. You will find that public service.
The hospital didn't have a referendum.
And the hospital, I don't support that. And the hospital actually has finances have been brushed off since that PPP. And so the BPSU doesn't support that hospital PPP, and we don't support this PPP. The other thing about this airport project is...
I will come back to the airport project, but I want to keep on about this question. Was it stopping democracy from working? Mm-hmm. Was it democracy? Because it's quite an important issue, I think.
Yeah, I think in a democracy, persons have a right to... A healthy democracy means that persons have a right to protest.
Absolutely, protest.
Yes.
Are they stopping democracy from working by preventing the MPs carrying out their business?
I wouldn't think so. I don't believe that we should stand by idly and allow the government to pass through something that is not in the best interest of the people of this country. And I'll say it again. If the government was able to prove, not with a survey of 400 persons, but somehow was able to prove that the majority of Bermudians support this particular project, I would not protest.
It's kind of interesting, actually. That kind of leads on... I'll come back to that. One of the things, of course, that we need to talk about is the recent decision by the governor to have an investigation into what happened. What's your view on this investigation? We haven't been given the details yet, the parameters, but is it a wise thing to do from your point of view?
An investigation into what
happened? The pepper spray incident.
Yes, yeah. I think the pepper spray was actually, let's call it for what it was, the police attacked citizens. Pepper spray is a weapon, and citizens were attacked. Peaceful demonstrators. Now, persons...
Having said that, there were a lot of people saying the police were attacked.
No, not in that circumstance. Now, at the beginning of the day, there was one attack on the police officer that was isolated. Then the pushing started. I recently saw a video that said somebody hit a police officer with an umbrella, and that was at the larger gate. What we're looking at is the incidents at the side gate. When those persons at the side gate, a lot of them wasn't even aware of what took place at the main gate. And they were standing there in front of that gate. And then the riot police ran off the hill and ran right into that particular crowd. And it was a lot of, because it was tight in those quarters on the sidewalk there, it was a lot of pushing and shoving. And then it became an attack on citizens.
Let's go. That's been very well documented, but I want to bring it up to date a bit by asking for your opinion about the governor's decision to have this investigation. What kind of parameters would you like to see? I mean, we haven't been given his terms of reference yet, I don't believe.
Yeah, I mean, I just want accountability. I'm not too inclined to support whether there's an external investigation by a UK officer or whether there's an internal investigation from the police department. I believe that the officer on the day who was responsible with the pepper spray should be held accountable for his actions. I don't think that The person should be actively working right now. I believe they should be on some type of administrative leave pending investigation.
But in terms of this actual investigation, mm-hmm. do you think it's the right thing to
do? I support an investigation, yes.
And do you obviously hope it will have accountability. Do you know, have you heard yet of his terms of reference?
No, I haven't heard of the terms of reference.
What would you hope they would be? In terms of its ability to investigate, in terms of its ability to make recommendations?
Yes, we want to investigate, we want to see where did the call come from, who made the decision that officers could or should discharge pepper spray. Was it the individual and his making a rogue decision? Because what we don't want to do is paint the whole police department as irresponsible. There was one or two irresponsible individuals on that day, and so those individuals should be held accountable. I've spoken with numerous police officers who have apologized for the action of the colleague, and obviously they feel some guilt or feel that it was a bit excessive. So if they're feeling that way, then generally the investigation should come out and see whether it was justified, whether the officer was justified in his actions or was he not justified in his actions.
And you'll cooperate with that investigation if called upon to do so?
I will, sir.
You mentioned about the airport, mm-hmm. if government could prove that the majority of people wanted the airport. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of talk, and again, I need your personal opinion because mm-hmm. you can't talk on behalf of others. There was a lot of talk at the time about the necessity, perhaps, of secret ballots before industrial action. Mm-hmm. Now, it could work both ways. It could be in the union's favour if the majority are in favour of industrial action. What was your position on secret ballots? Do you think that there's a place for them here?
I think
secret ballots for industrial action.
I think that's in reference to how you arrive to a decision of protest and industrial action. And so internally, in terms of process, I wouldn't shy away from a secret ballot if persons are influenced by feel timid to put up their hand to vote yes or no for industrial action.
Well, I suppose the thing about the secret ballot is that you would have to ballot all members.
I think all members are not interested in every action that the organization participates in.
Well, that's
in.
The point, isn't it, though, then?
No, because in any democracy or any democratic, you never get 100% full participation in the process.
No, you don't.
Even for
you still get the majority of those taking part. Is that not a worthwhile exercise?
So it becomes done a matter of functionality. Is it practical to do so on every decision that's being made? In reference to industrial action, you have seen very, very few from the BPSU. Instances where we've been out on strike. We may do the occasional march here and there, but that's march and then going back to work. You don't see us.
But it's still a work time stoppage, isn't it?
But that's also very few. From the BPSU's perspective, that's very few incidences. I'm all for transparency, I'm all for accountability in organizations, I'm all for good governance. If that's the way my membership feels, then there's a avenue within their organization in which my membership can put that to the floor and not have a majority of persons vote on it, support it, and that will be the rules of the organization moving forward.
We mentioned the airport, mm-hmm. we're going to come on to that now. Just in case people don't know, just outline your main objections to the airport, if you could.
First and foremost, public service unions, we don't typically support PPPs. We believe that they end up being more costly than other alternatives of financing. We have enough evidence to support that. We believe that they lead to privatization. We also see that happening in this airport project. While some say it's not privatization, given a concession agreement for somebody to run a facility for a 30-year period, we consider that to be privatization.
Because it does return to Bermuda after 30 years.
So they say
that's in the contract, and that's the nature of PPPs.
I didn't see where after 30 years, Aecon returns the management of the airport back to the Bermuda government. I don't recall reading that part.
I'm pretty sure I read it, but I'm not going to quote it.
And so that we have concern with. So
But if it was returned to the Bermuda government and Bermuda people after 30 years, and that was in the contract, would you have the same concerns?
I don't support 30 years of privatization, even if it's returned. And so I don't support the 30 years of privatization. I never had a problem with the management of our airport. And so why?
It's not about management, is it? It's about the cost of replacing it.
So we're doing one thing. We're talking about constructing a new airport. So if we need a foreign entity to construct a new airport, that's one thing. But then why do we need that foreign entity to manage the airport moving forward? We had a Department of Airport Operations that was doing an excellent job in managing the airport. I haven't heard complaints about the management of the airport. So why then that has to change over into foreign hands? I don't understand that.
But the biggest part, presumably, is the amount being spent on it. Do you think?
I think it's other ways to ensure that those persons are remunerated for the work that's being done, rather than turning over control of the airport to those individuals.
Do you think there's a need for a new airport?
I believe that I would like to see a new airport.
So how would you build it?
I wouldn't use the PPP structure, and I would, you know what, me personally, right? What I would do is I'll ask Bermudians to invest in that infrastructure. I believe there's enough money in the economy where we can do so. Or I'll go back to the traditional way. I'll go through a PPP and I'll borrow the money. I'll do the traditional method, RFP, I'm sorry.
RFP.
And I'll borrow the money.
Because, of course, the argument is there just isn't the money around. The government can't afford to borrow more, hence the PPP.
And this thing about debt. Every country has debt. As our debt at an alarming level. If we do have debt on our books versus debt not on our books, do we still not have to pay that money back? And so I have a problem with giving away revenues, giving all these concessions to this to the developer. And then on top of that, the BPSU, the Bermuda government, still retains a large portion of expenses because they still have to fund the airport Quingo. Now, you've given up your revenue. You still have expenses for the airport Quingo. Where do you get that money for the expensive form after you've just given up your revenue?
Just going back, you mentioned getting Bermudians to give the money, so they'd be shareholders. Now, of course, shareholders demand a dividend, so you'd still be giving the money back to them and taking it out of revenue, government revenue.
Yeah, and we would still have operational control of our airport, and the legislator would still be responsible for the rates in which we pay to utilize those facilities. And we start talking about de-legislating the rates so that the management company then can set the rates of usage for the facility. We have fundamental problems with that.
I mean, I interviewed the former CEO of the BTA some time ago, and he was absolutely adamant that Bermuda needs a new airport. Absolutely adamant that it needs a new airport.
I would like to see a new airport. I would like to see a new airport. I just don't support this development plan.
It's kind of too late for government to back out now, though, isn't it? Regardless of what happens, I think at the last estimate was around about $23 million that it would owe ACON if it pulled out now. It's too far down the road to actually stop?
I don't think so. $25 million versus $1.3 billion? I still think you can have an alternative model that comes in underneath that $1.3 billion that will be, some say 1.3, but let's be conservative and say around $1 billion. I think the government needs to let us know what the actual cost of the airport is going to be, and then we can pay rather that cost versus us having to pay $25 million is worth it.
Regardless, it seems like the airport is going to be a continuous bone of contention for you guys, isn't it?
Yes, and it's typical public service unions, right? When they're never in support of these things. Typically, you don't find it, and typically you don't find them rolling over and laying down and just allowing these things to happen. They put the best foot forward to ensure that it doesn't happen, and sometimes they still happen. And that's if it happens and the contracts are signed, that's a pill we'd have to swallow. But what we're gonna say is we're gonna put our best foot forward to ensure that this doesn't happen.
Coming on to the BPSU, and in particular the civil service, it wasn't that long ago where some proposed civil service amendments were apparently accidentally gazetted.
Yeah.
You made the point recently in a statement that they haven't been formally withdrawn. What is going on with that at the moment?
I don't know. It's a very bizarre set of circumstances. The Premier comes out and says on December 2nd, the amendments were gazetted. The Premier says that they were gazetted in error and that they will be revoked.
Mm.
To this day, they haven't been revoked. We have to ask ourselves, why haven't they been revoked when we've had commitments from the government that they need to be revoked, that they were going to be revoked, and an admission that they were published in error. And these amendments have a severe effect on the public service.
Could you just outline what you think that effect is?
Firstly, when you have the Public Service Commission set objective for the senior public servants, then that ultimately means that the PSC is appointed by the governor. The governor is serving on behalf of the FCO, representing the UK government, and actually means that our government is in the hands of the UK government. The civil service, direct control. And it's very difficult on both scales. Number one, if you shift accountability or responsibility to the ministers, then you politicize your public service. When you shift it to the UK, then we lose some of the autonomy we've enjoyed as Bermuda. Now, in other overseas territories, the deputy governor and governor has direct control over the public service. But our constitution is much more advanced, and we've enjoyed more political autonomy than those other overseas territories. As a result, it actually be a step back for the country, not a step forward.
Now, one side of the coin is, people would say that would make the civil service much more accountable. The other side of the coin would say that perhaps it's, a colonial power grab.
Yes. And that's what the AMB view it.
I mean, Bob Richards has been on record as saying that the civil service isn't accountable.
I don't agree. Their senior civil servants have had performance measures. We can have a conversation about accountability. Nobody has shied away from accountability for senior public servants. We've been in consultation in reference to what would be the best way forward. But the amendments that were published is certainly not the way forward.
Isn't it a little bit the case, to quote a friend of yours perhaps, isn't it a case at the moment of Caesar judging Caesar, and where the civil service are in terms of accountability, in that you haven't got an outside body or an outside person that the civil service is accountable to? You're accountable to the head of the civil service.
Okay. Accountability means there is absence of some type of measures that hold people accountable. And if we say
external accountability, then I'll rephrase it.
And whom should they be accountable to?
Well, in this case, it'll be, I think I'm right in saying, it'll be the deputy governor, if these amendments were brought in.
Yeah, but under natural circumstances, the PS is accountable to the CS. The CS is accountable to the Premier and with consultation with the Public Service Commission. That's the way we'd like to see it remain.
So why do you think they're doing this? Why do you think these plans are in the pipeline or being discussed?
I've had conversations with the former governor, who has had a vision of how he would like to see the civil service move. He would like to see the senior civil servants on fixed-term contracts. He would like to see more control of the civil service through the PSC. And personally, at this point, we disagree with those things, and these are some of the things we see implemented in this PS.
Why do you disagree with them, though? I mean, an awful lot of people are on fixed-term contracts.
You know what? I don't think public service employees, senior public service employees, are shying away from performance measures. But what would be the effect of placing somebody on a three-year contract? If you're not performing, then we'll get rid of you and we'll get somebody else in. Or could it create a avenue where I can now begin to appoint persons who I feel more comfortable with? Because there is this idea that obviously persons of the private sector, right, and if the public service was managed better by the private sector, we wouldn't have a lot of the problems we have, because apparently private sector individuals are more efficient in running operations than public service employees. And so we come to that clash where we don't want to see a large number of persons coming from the private sector and running the public service. Majority of the public service there have been tenured public service employees. The permanent secretaries have been tenured public service employees and are very familiar with the way in which government operates and works.
If, I mean, I'm playing devil's advocate, but if I was on a three-year contract, I might want to perform incredibly well to make sure I get another three-year contract. Is that not something in favour of it? I mean, at the moment, there's a sense, perhaps it's a jobs for life.
That's not what this debate is about. If it's surely about accountability, we want to have a conversation with how we hold individuals accountable. We believe we can hold individuals accountable by putting proper performance measures in place. If persons are not working up to standard, then there's avenues to remove persons that are not up to standard. If you're not achieving your work objectives, then there is avenues for you to be dismissed from the public service. It's not one of those jobs for life. We do have public service employees who do get dismissed for not meeting the standard that is necessary for the objectives of the public service to be achieved.
So I don't really understand then your particular objection. Excuse me if I'm being ignorant. Mm-hmm. I don't really understand your particular objection then.
To
more accountability, to be more accountable to the Public Service Commission, to the FCO, etc., etc.
I don't think it increases accountability.
And so what are the dangers?
What it does is it increases the UK's control over the public service, but I don't think it increases
accountability. Through the governor and the deputy governor.
Correct, but I don't think it increases accountability.
If these measures aren't withdrawn officially, what will happen?
This organization will seek other avenues to oppose those objections and force the removal of those particular provisions.
And what those avenues
be? There are some legal avenues that may be available to us.
Judicial review?
Certainly. We have to start to begin to talk about unilateral changes of employee contracts, whether that's legitimate or not, whether there is a constitutional issue in reference to the PSC setting performance objectives or ministers being involved in that process of permanent secretaries. So there are some avenues that are available to us. But hopefully we don't have to explore those avenues. The Premier said that there's things were published, the regulations were published in error, and we would like to see them revoked.
Just moving on to more, I suppose, to the social side of things. It's quite a long quote, but it's kind of important that I read it out. After the Labour Day last year, you were quoted as saying, it's a very sad state we are presently in. Something is fundamentally wrong with our system. The government has failed to put policies in place that increase employment. They have failed to encourage the private sector to create jobs. I'm not going to go on and on with that, but what policies would you put in place? If you were the Premier, if you were in Cabinet, what are the kind of policies that you would like to put in place?
For employment?
For employment, for the social side, for business side.
Certainly, I will install a number of policies. First and foremost, we would have more apprenticeship programs where persons are tied into employment, where work permits are tied into training and remedians. That's certainly a policy that we'll put into place.
Wasn't that called Sven and Johnny some time ago?
Okay. What we would do is term limits. We have to look at the removal of term limits to say what has happened to Bermudian employment since term limits were removed. If we can look and see that there is a correlation between the increase in unemployment after term limits were removed, we may have to look at instituting term limits again, because I believe term limits assisted with having companies understand that expatriate workers are here for a fixed term, and in the meantime, they look to train Bermudians to fill those particular positions. If they don't have that as the motivation anymore, I believe they're less inclined to train Bermudians. In terms of social policies, we need much more social policies in the country. If the government's social agenda was equal to its business agenda, it wouldn't be no debate whether DOBA would be the next
government. What kind of social policies? Can you be more specific?
In terms of welfare when it comes to workers. Unemployment insurance should be something that we really need to consider. Livable wage is something that we need to consider. I believe that having low wages or having the ability to pay workers low wages is not encourages companies to bring in expatriate workers and pay them those low wages. And I don't think it makes an atmosphere where Bermudians can be gainfully employed and work in areas where they have dignified work. So livable wage is something that we need to consider.
Things like that, isn't there a risk that you've scared companies off from employing altogether?
I don't think so. I think that the companies that came to Bermuda, they operate in jurisdictions where these things were the norm.
What about the, the finance minister is planning a progressive tax. What do you think about that?
I support a progressive payroll tax. I support more progressive income tax, and I would like to see us transfer from moving from payroll tax to income tax and a progressive system of income tax.
In a column recently on Bernier's, it was last week actually, you said that there was real hurt in this community.
Yes.
What do you mean by that?
There are people who are experiencing real pain in this community, both social and financial pain. And somehow we need to alleviate some of the hurt that these individuals are feeling. Persons have been unemployed for several years now. That has a effect on their dignity and the way in which they feel in this community. A lot of persons are feeling displaced in their home, and they feel as though there is no more hope for them in Bermuda. You also see a large number of persons emigrating out of Bermuda and moving to the UK to obtain other social benefits. We have a lot of single parents who are struggling because they can't afford childcare for the particular children and things.
Is this worse now or under an OBA government, or was it bad under a PLP government?
I believe since the recession, things have got worse and there has been no stopgap measure. So the recession made things very, it was a reality check for many in Bermuda. So I want to attribute it to the OBA versus the PLP government. There has been a downhill a decline in Bermudian employment since then, and that has led to increased social conditions, and I don't believe that anybody or either government did a good enough job of putting a stopgap measure in place to alleviate the hurt, and I think it's now worse now than it was in the past. And I believe that the OBA has less of a social agenda than the PLP, and as a result, persons are feeling the brunt greater.
Do you think that's pretty much at the cause of a lot of the sort of demonstrations that we see?
I believe so. I believe if persons were satisfied with a lot of the social conditions or their own financial condition, you won't find them joining in marches and protests.
Just moving on again, because we're running out of time a little bit, so I just want to cover the last bit of ground that we've got. Speaking on behalf of the People's Campaign, now, you guys said that you're going to have a series of public meetings to get feedback, as we've been talking, on the formulation of social and economic plans. How are you going to do all that? Just take me through the process, because it's going to. Are you going to almost prepare a paper on it too?
Yes, what we plan to do is after these meetings have a blueprint that we can put back out there. Some things that individuals can do to improve their social and economic conditions, and then there are some things that we need to do as a collective, and then there are some things that we need to call on the government to do. And so I wrote an article about social investment strategies, and I think that's something the government needs to consider. It's kind of a balance between social welfare and balancing the efficiency that's required to have sustainable social initiatives and policies in place that actually not only give out welfare but enrich the lives of persons so that they are now empowered and so that you build capacity within individuals so that they can become productive members of society and they're not in this constant state of dependency.
What are you going to do? I mean, successive governments haven't been particularly great at taking on board reports and putting into practice recommendations. I imagine there must be several dozen sitting on a shelf getting dusty at the moment. That could happen to yours.
If somehow we can transfer the blueprint into objectives that the people demand from their politicians when they come to the doorstep during election time, and they get fed into the election mandates and then successive threats, I think we either have accomplished a lot.
Do you think then there's a chance that perhaps the PLP might take him on board for his manifesto?
I believe that the either party needs to embrace these things. If not, they're not going to see the social and economic condition of the country change, of those that are on the bottom end of the scale in this country.
I mean, talking about manifestos, mm-hmm. we're going to see an election probably later this year.
Yeah.
What kind of... Who do you think will win?
I don't think that the OBA has done enough to secure a second term in government. People are still uneasy about the PLP. They haven't seen the PLP's plan. So equal sides, I believe that is concern on both sides. But I believe that a lot of people that chose not to vote in the last election will vote in the next election. And I think if we judge by the by-election results, that the PLP certainly looks stronger heading into the next election than the OBA government.
How's the union's relationship with the PLP at the moment? It would seem to me that Mark Bean wanted to or was trying to take the PLP further to the right. Mm-hmm. Now we've got a new leader. What's the relationship like?
There is no formal relationship between the union and the Progressive Labour Party, and I don't support a formal relationship between the two. However, if you espouse or you promote that you're a Labour Party, we certainly want to see policies that are in line with the Labour movement. And so we hold the PLP government to a greater account of having social and social democratic policies than we would the OBA government.
So you would expect now perhaps the PLP to be more of a traditional Labour Party, and I phrase that in the context of what I just said, that Mark Bean seems to be moving it to the right.
Correct. We would hope that they're centre-left rather than centre-right.
And do you see that happening?
We would have to see their mandate moving into the next election and some of their promises to the community to actually see if their policies are in alignment with. For example, in terms of tax policy, we find that both parties have a consistent tax policy. And we wouldn't expect both parties to have the Conservative Party and the Labour Party to have the same tax policy. That's one of the things that need to fundamentally change. If the PLP is going to run those social programs, then they need to have the proper taxation system to support those social programs.
And somebody again asked me a question, posed a question via Facebook, and they said there are different forms of unions. There's a business unionism, mm-hmm. community unions, social movement unions, etc., etc. In the context of that, how would you describe the BPSU?
The BPSU, we've moved from the servicing model of unionism to the organizing model of unionism, which is a much more community-based and social-based form of unionism. It is also one where it's proactive rather than reactive. It's one that gets ahead of issues rather than sits back and reacts to issues. It's one that promotes the bottom-up approach in the unions, and we certainly embrace and promote the bottom-up. It's no mandate that comes from my membership that I don't carry out.
And talking about the vision for the future, what do you see as your biggest challenges and opportunities in terms of the BPSU?
In terms of opportunities, diversifying. We've been typically a public service union, but there is so much. Is the need for representation in the workplace. It's in both the private sector and public sector, so branching out further into the public sector is an opportunity. A threat.
It's getting membership from the public.
Correct. A threat to the union is the union has always been based, in terms of its finances, been based off of membership dues, and I think we need to diversify a bit in terms of being self-sustaining organizations, and also doing a lot more than what we're currently doing, involving ourselves in the development of cooperatives and things that are in the best interest of our members.
Okay. On that note, Mr. Hayward, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in to Burr News Current Affairs Podcast with Jeremy Deacon. Listen at your leisure on www.burrnews.com, your 24/7 Bermuda news source.